5, 4, 3, 2, 1. We're live. We're live, Micah. We're live.
This is the Grillion Report. The unusual, weird news, anomalies, exopolitics. It's beyond the fringe, where conspiracy theory can become conspiracy fact. This is the Grillion Report with your host, Micah Hanks.
From hundreds of miles beneath terra firma in the depths of the hollow earth, live from the Grillion Bunker. Welcome one and all to the Grillion Report. I'm your host, happy and, of course, well-to-do down here in the hollow earth. Micah Hanks is my name. Joining me in studio, my younger brother of 3 years to the day. And right here, illuminating the darkness in the Mohorovicic dust discontinuity, Mr. Caleb Hanks. How are you, sir?
I am alive.
He has cheated death once again. I think most members of the Hanks family have in recent days. Just goes to show the resilience of those who want to bring truth to you on a weekly basis. It is the Grillion Report, and you tune in every week for that very express purpose. And speaking of truth speaking, later tonight we're going to be talking really with a lot of active players in the field of UFO research. They will include our friends, the Bruds, down in Weatherford, Mr. Cam and Kyle of Expanded Perspectives, as well as my amigo Red Pill Junkie, who was at the Roswell Slides event as it unfolded in Mexico City late last week. Now, subsequent to this broadcast, of course, the Richard Dolan program will pick up there as well. And Richard, who also was there at the event, is going to be giving his perspectives about what I think it is fair to call at this point an aftermath following the events that transpired over the weekend. And one of the key players in that series of events, that is the full exposure of the nature of, the origin behind, and the solution to the Roswell Slides mystery. One man who was involved with this, Paul Kimball, is going to join us during hour two as well. And he's going to give us the information about what led to the ultimate discovery of what we are dealing with in these photographs. And then we're never going to talk about it again. I think a lot of the people in our listenership, Caleb, have been asking, please, please, no more about the Roswell Slides. And I think that that is a fair thing to acknowledge on behalf of our listeners. As constituents of us, the elected Grailians, yes, we will respect that wish that we don't just beat that dead horse. But I tell you, I think it's important enough that we talk about it at least tonight. And that's going to be a enduring and continuous discussion throughout the course of this program. But first, I want to also say a quick howdy to my brother, Mr. Hobbs, back in Master Control. Race, how are you?
I am well, Micah. Thank you for asking. How you doing, fellas?
We're doing great.
Hello.
Yes.
Let's beat that dead horse.
Let's beat that dead horse. Let's pick it up. Let's cook him and serve him for dinner.
Eat it.
Well, you know, I mean, a lot of people are like, oh, come on, what else needs to be said? Let's look at a few things. First of all, is it fair to call it a hoax? Race, what do you think? You think it was fair to call this Roswell Slides thing a hoax?
I've been thinking about that.
Really? Easy now.
The FedEx guy's in danger.
you better go protect him. Caleb, I'll come to you instead. Let me know, man. Hoax, or was this just poorly handled?
Neither. I think it's hype, honestly.
There is a distinction, isn't there? Good.
I think it's hype over absolutely, yeah, I won't get into it. Nothing.
Yeah. Well, I don't think it's a hoax, but you know what?
Honestly, I just feel like if people had taken a little bit closer look to begin with, I don't think there really was much to look at. I mean, anyway, whatever.
Well, no, I agree. I agree. And that's why I had been saying it. I don't want to play the I told you so game. Nick Redfern had essentially called BS about this early on. He came back, in fairness, I have to say. Look, Nick's my buddy. Rich Dolan's my buddy. Nick said maybe I was a bit too hasty, and he backed off of that and tried to maintain a bit of objectivity leading up to it. But then, of course, the moment that the first big reveal occurred, that is, that people were taking screen grabs of the thing, that the purported alien, of course, in what is being called Kodachrome Slide 11. As soon as that was leaked online, And I got to pay kudos to a fellow KGRA host, a couple of them here, actually. First, Chase Kletsky, of course, was one of the paid subscribers who was watching this, along with a number of others. Ruben Uriarte and a lot of folks were watching this. And, you know, she was kind of live blogging about it. And then when the Roswell Research Group, which has nothing to do with the people who are promoting the slides, but that's Paul Kimball, Chris Rutkowski, and a lot of other individuals. When those guys actually were called on the carpet by the owners of the slides over the weekend and accused of photoshopping something, Race Hobbs here at KGRA was the very first guy to bring that to my attention. And so, you know, again, the network here, in the, both the literal sense and also the network of minds who are following this, we were in touch throughout the weekend. And I got to tell you, it is both laughable but also meaningful in the sense that we, I think, have learned a lot about this. And the big takeaway, as we're going to talk about later with Paul Kimball, is that what we learn? No, not that UFOs are a lost cause. No, not that UFOs are something that shouldn't be studied or should be just ridiculed, as many have sought to do for the last, you know, several decades. No, this wasn't a hoax, but I think Caleb absolutely hit the nail on the head, spot on, dead center bullseye, hype versus hoax. This one's hype, and we see where it got them, leaping before they looked. You know, and this is what's beautiful. These guys with these Roswell slides in their possession, they had these things, they had months and months, years in fact, to come to scientific determinations about what was in the photo. They claimed that they had upper echelons of government involved in looking at these independent analyses by individuals all over the world. And of course, Andrew Dew, though, as a result of hilarious things that were going on, ends up misstepping, I think, and misspeaking and saying that somewhere in the neighborhood of only between 3 and 6 people were involved. I'll have to get confirmation on the exact number later, but it doesn't matter because apparently among those who were promoting the Roswell slides, there were differing opinions on how many people had actually looked at it. But one thing is pretty clear. It seems highly unlikely that the number of experts that these individuals promoting these slides had claimed had been involved were actually involved to any significant degree. And yes, I think that the big takeaway is that A, probably somebody was lying, B, somebody was seeking to profit off of those lies, and C, the end result, of course, is a lot of tarnished reputations, and some, frankly, who I don't think necessarily deserved it. In other words, of course, the wider-reaching repercussions of all this and the lack of fundamental skepticism that was being espoused is probably a few hurt egos and also a few bruised reputations. So it's a real sad state of affairs, but one that we have to discuss, because if we don't, you know, lest we not observe now, we, of course, run the risk of entering again into blindness and repeating in the future. We've got to talk about this, and so we're going to a little bit tonight, but just one more thing before we get to some news, because I want to save most of that for the second hour, but Caleb, at the 2013 International UFO Congress, you were actually backstage. You were working during a presentation given by our friend, yours and mine, Jaime Masson. Were you not?
I wouldn't say he was my friend, but I was.
You were. Just out of curiosity, any you know, general feelings that you may have about your observations of Jaime Masson?
Yeah, he's the great aggregator. He's the great aggregator of video clips, whether they seem credible or not, of anything unexplained, and that is about it.
Let me tell you something funny. A few years ago, when what was referred to as the Mexican screaming demon was making the rounds online, and Jaime Masson got all big and behind this, Joshua Warren was taking pictures at the Congress that year, and he was, and I think he gave him to Forrest Conner, and Forrest was texting him to me so that I could see this thing, and I said, oh my God, somebody skinned a monkey. And I don't mean that in like a sexual way. No, literally, there was a skinned monkey that somebody put in a bear trap, and they were taking blurry photos and posting them online, and I'm thinking, this, you say, is an alien?
To be honest with you, I'm honestly kind of glad that this transpired the way it did, because it kind of brought to the forefront people that will just believe complete BS. I mean, in my experience, I've seen plenty of weird little skeletons and mummy skeletons and things like that that look exactly like what it was. It was a human.
Yeah.
And people that can look at that and be like, well, there's something weird with the hands, or there's something weird with the bone structure. This is obviously not human. I'm glad that we were presented with this opportunity, because then we were able to see the people that can look at something like that And I'm not saying don't question things, but I'm saying the number one conclusion that we should probably look at when we are dealing with a picture of a humanoid, an obviously humanoid skeleton, is to think, well, it's probably human. I'm not saying don't look into it. I'm not saying don't test the damn thing for human DNA. It's just, why jump to the most ridiculous conclusions right offhand? It just blows my mind.
I know, exactly. It's strange. Crawling from the earth, we seem to have an amalgamation of earthworms that have formed the shape of a human. It must be an alien! My God, proof that Roswell actually happened. You know, what's... I'll listen to Race back there laughing, but you know what? That's just about...
He's just laughing because his dog ate the FedEx guy.
Yes, exactly.
Boy, he almost did. I'm not kidding. You know, I wanted to chime in.
Please do, Race.
You know, if there was a hoax of any kind, in my thought, it had to have originated from the person who revealed these slides to start with.
Adam Dew, right?
I've got to be honest with you. The most compelling part of it all when I first heard about it was the providence of this of these slides.
Sure.
Or how they were found hidden away, you know, in the jacket, in the cover of the case.
And, well, at least that's what we were told.
Well, yeah, see, that's what we're told. So wherever... You know, I think if there was a hoax of any kind or anybody profited, it was probably those people, because it cost a lot of money to put on an event like what I witnessed on streaming online.
Oh, were you actually watching?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. Chase Kletsky was kind enough to buy me a ticket.
Yeah, I was very appreciative. Caleb and I actually were on the road. We weren't able to tune in, but Chase's live blogging that she did was, I can't count the ways that was helpful. And then the next day, she slept on it, and she gets up the next day and says, you know, the more I look at this, I'm looking at, you know, a little infant mummy, you know, and it even looks like it's lying on the wrappings probably of, you know, probably, you know, some, you know, something that belongs in a museum. I mean, she was spot on. I mean, that's exactly what it's turned out to be. And so, you know, that was very useful. I mean, did you have any other general observations while you were watching this race that, I mean, came to mind, or issues that you had with the presentation itself?
I honestly walked away from it thinking that it was very compelling. There was a lot of compelling things.
Really?
A lot of it was in Spanish, and I didn't understand it. I mean, half the time I was, you know, cussing, wishing I had bought the Rosetta Stone and learned Spanish a long time ago. But the truth of it was, I thought some of the information was compelling. I, like you, you know, thought I'm looking at, you know, some sort of a little mummy. But at the same time, you know, when you think you're listening to credible people, you know, describe anatomy and things like that, you know, it was compelling. And I deemed that it needed further research. There just wasn't. You know, I kept waiting on them to come up with something like, we read on this placard and deciphered it, and it says, you know, this was recovered from a mysterious crash in the desert in 1947 or something like that. You know, and it never happened. It never, you know, nothing ever really, you know, came with the, there never was the shocker, Micah.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was a conversation I had with Richard. I agreed with Richard that they needed to put this on a website with all the stuff. The moment that the original scan hit the website at Kodachrome, that Kodachrome website, what was it?
Let me see here. I can find it for you here. It's slideboxmedia.com.
Slidebox Media. That's correct. Thank you, Micah. The moment that it hit it, you know, and I was able to look at it, I didn't need software. I could see it with bare eyes.
I know.
And I was told by somebody, and I can't remember who it was, but I was told by someone that, you know, the guy who did the Raimi texts in the video, in the from the picture of the Roswell debris displayed, actually looked at this photograph, this slide.
Oh, really?
And could not determine. And where, I can't remember. I wish I could remember who told me that. And I'm not sure if it was on the slide, on the presentation in Mexico or not. But if, you know, when someone says something like that, you know, that's another part of credence that you think, well, you know, they've really done some good research. They've you know, spread this around and showed it to people and got it looked at. But it just never really rang true. I just didn't want to rush to judgment on all of it. And I damn sure didn't want to nail anybody to a cross over it.
Well, see, but, that's a very important point right there, Race. You know, I've seen so many people, you know, oh, Tom Carey, oh, Don Schmidt, oh, Jaime Masson, you know, to hell with all of them. You know, I don't think that. I think that they have, and they will, as a result of this, receive the kind of public attention that nobody in you know, or I should say, who is put to the test by virtue of the fickle public, they're going to get that kind of negative press that nobody really ever wants to have. Sadly, and I want to say a note about my friend and colleague, Richard Dolan, who will be going live tonight after this program. A few people, not that many, but a few people have been castigating Rich Dolan for being involved. I listened to what Rich said on Coast to Coast immediately after the event, and I quoted him at MicahHanks.com. And if you want the full download on what's been going on since the day of the event and leading up until this past weekend, including actually what I argue is some fairly innovative discoveries about the origins and the specific mummy involved, which we have at MicahHanks.com right now. Front and center, the lead story there, you'll be able to see on the blog page. And I'll talk more about that later in the second hour, because there was one researcher who actually came about that information one day before I did, but it was Anthony Bergaglia, and there are some questions about whether or not, in fact, certain members of the pro-camp, pro-alien, this-is-the-real-deal camp, whether or not they actually had this information all along and were withholding it prior to this public expose. That's certainly, I'm not going to advocate that position myself, but I know that's certainly what Paul Kimball has suggested, Greg Bishop also, and many others, during a roundtable discussion on Radio Mysterioso that was live last night, and I listened to the entire thing. I mean, I have followed everything about this. I was listening to Richard Dolan on Coast. I was listening to Paul Kimball and Red Pill Junkie last night on Radio Mysterioso, and I'm going to tell you right now, my perspective on all of this is that there's almost no way that those involved could be so incompetent that they didn't know some of this stuff. The origin of the mummy, where it had been found, the museum it was kept in, all of this we know now. And, of course, all of that's over at MicahHanks.com. Anthony Bergaglia, the blogger over at the UFO Conjectures blog, he was the only other guy a day before me who had access to this information, blogged about it, took the blog post down. Okay, and I found it on the news aggregator site before its news. They had carried it and reprinted the entire thing before Bergaglia took his down, and so I was able to confirm, yeah, he actually came to the same determination that I did, that this was basically from Mesa Verde, and that this was a 2-year-old mummy, just like the placard in the analysis that was provided by the Roswell Slides Research Group shows. Now, I just want to point out really, really quickly, and then seriously, we are going to go into some news here, but I'm at the slideboxmedia.com website. And that is the site which is, of course, Andrew Dew's site, which is essentially for Kodachrome, the documentary. And Paul Kimball and others, as we'll talk about in the next hour, we're kind of disputing whether or not there's going to be a documentary at this point, because really, what would be the point in continuing with this? Again, I'm pretty convinced somebody knew this, but Caleb, I just want to say real quick, in race, there's been no update at their website. They're still maintaining that the Roswell Slides Research Group, an independent international group of skeptics and UFO advocates like Chris Rutkowski, had faked this thing and photoshopped the entire thing.
I honestly feel like, okay, my big question was, number one, are they really just overlooking the obvious when they're looking at this picture? And I'm not saying that they are, but it would be easy to think that maybe they completely were, because it reminds me of a similar situation that happened with two jokers down in Georgia that said had a Bigfoot body. But listen to this. Okay, so these guys claim they have a Bigfoot body, but here's something really interesting about what's happened at this particular conference, and I'm not accusing anybody. I'm just saying that if this were the angle they were going to take, it's a good way to keep any profits that they made from it. If they are claiming gullibility or being gullible and not really knowing what they're looking at and saying, we honestly think that this is a slide from Roswell, then that doesn't mean that because they were wrong about it, that they have to give back any of the proceeds that were put into that. So basically what's happening is they are being like, sorry, we just thought it was an alien.
Caleb, this is hilarious, by the way. Red Pill is in the chat room right now. Red Pill Junkie actually just wrote that Jaime Masson's position as of yesterday, apparently, is that the placard is circumstantial evidence. The real evidence is the body. Let me tell you something.
Oh, my God.
We know what the body is. We know where it's from. You want to go look at the... And the other thing, this is something else I meant to bring up. Race, I know you've been laughing about this. One of these jokers, one of the so-called experts, and actually, before I'm too harsh about them, you know, or on them, I want to say that the experts were looking at something taken out of its proper archaeological and historical and anthropological context. Had they known they were looking at, you know, again, a mummy, and had they known the origins of the mummy, they might not have made the determinations that they did. Looking at a blurry photo that somebody was claiming, okay, this could be an alien. And also, I would say, noting different cultural values and attitudes as they relate to the subject of UFOs, I can understand why maybe, taken out of context, people would come to determinations the likes of, oh, maybe this thing isn't a mammal. But I'm going to tell you something. In the evolutionary history of humankind, and not just humankind, but all animalia, all around the world, since time immemorial, I have never seen something that looked so humanoid that was in any way anything but mammalian. We have mammals that swim our oceans. We have mammals that crawl between crevices within our earth. We have mammals that walk upright and that stomp around and that utilize the manipulation of matter, i.e. humans, to control aspects of nature themselves. What you see in that photograph is humanoid. It has hands. It has digits upon its hands. It has feet. It has feet. It is bipedal. It has a head, and it has obviously a head with a cranium, or a cranial capacity, I should say, which befits that of a brain large enough for rational, intelligent thought. You are looking at a human child in the photograph, and anyone, biologist, evolutionary scientist, I don't care who, what, where, if you try to make an argument against the mammalian nature of what is in that blurry photograph, I'm sorry, that's not scientific. And we need to school you again on evolutionary science, on biology. Oh, but then again, Caleb, I guess I'm not being skeptical enough, you know.
Yeah, screw it.
I'm just trying to pander, you know, mystery fodder to my followers, you know, so that somebody can go blog about it or something like that. You know, the point is that, guys, nobody's perfect. These self-righteous skeptics who come out and say, you know, we were born with a BS detector. No. And for those who were duped by this, you know, I hope you have learned, as good skeptics learn over time, to separate the proverbial wheat from the chaff. Because, you know, from time to time, anybody, given the right circumstances, biologists, chemists, evolutionary biologists, astronomers, doesn't matter what walk of life or what discipline you come from, you can be fooled. Many of us have been. Many of us are. A few good people were fooled in this instance. You know, I am not the be-all, end-all word on this, but I'm trying to provide a balanced commentary about it, as is Caleb, as is Race Hobbs, as will Richard Dolan in just a couple of hours here on this network. But, you know, again, the big takeaway is open dialogue, question, and get off your high horse. Share that information with others, as we're going to share with you when we come back here on the Graylian Report. You've been hearing strange sounds, it very well may be alarm bells ringing. As we'll be discussing strange sounds here in just a moment. Welcome back. It is the Graylian Report. But the kind of sound I'm talking about, first of all, I know it doesn't have anything to do with the Roswell slides. No, this was reported by the Tribune in India, who said that in what could ring alarm bells for the Indian security establishment, a report of the United States Department of Defense has warned about China's destructive space program of stalling or destroying satellites of other countries and how its nuclear-powered submarines now make forays into the Indian Ocean. Now, released on May 8th, the DOD's annual report to the U.S. Congress on military and security developments involving the People's Republic of China, 2015, talks about a mystery object that Beijing had launched into space on a ballistic trajectory with a peak altitude above 30,000 kilometers. Now, this trajectory took it near geosynchronous orbit, where many nations maintain communications and Earth-sensing satellites. The object re-entered Earth's orbit in 9.5 hours after launch. According to this U.S. report, they failed to identify it and stated that the launch profile was not consistent with traditional space launch vehicles, nor ballistic missiles, not even sounding rocket launches used for scientific research. It could, however, have been a test of technologies with a counter-space mission. Now, China continues to develop a variety of capabilities designing to limit or prevent the use of space-based assets by its adversaries, including the development of directed energy weapons and satellite jammers. This according to the U.S. report. The U.S. expressed concern that China's continued development of destructive space technologies represented a threat to all peaceful nations. Now, boy, if that doesn't sprinkle a little salt in your coffee, I don't know what will. The potentially destructive Chinese space program, as cited by the Department of Defense. Now, this U.S. report that I'm referring to here talked about how China, for the first time, had deployed submarines to the Indian Ocean, including a nuclear-powered attack submarine. The submarines were probably conducting area familiarization and demonstrating an emerging capability both to protect China's sea lines of communications and, of course, to increase China's power projection into the Indian Ocean. India assumes a lead role in the Indian Ocean, and China's foray is a challenge. New Delhi has a total of only 14 submarines at their disposal right now, including the one nuclear-powered ISN Chakra, which is leased from Russia. Talk about strange bedfellows. And speaking of Russia, of course, we talked a little while ago about this mystery submarine off the Finnish coast. Before that, I believe that there was another one that was seen in territorial waters. And depth charges, of course, have been dropped to allow them not to try and attack, but to let them know, hey, guys, just wanted to say howdy. We know you're down there. And now we know that the Chinese are operating submarines beneath the Indian Ocean just as well. So a lot of people are really concerned about these things, but again, coming back to the idea of a mystery object being launched into space, something that's not consistent with most known rocket launches, what exactly could China be launching? You know, Caleb, oh boy, I don't know if folks at home were able to hear that. We have a mystery boom here in the studio. Hopefully we won't lose our server connections.
That was thunder, everybody. I think Mike made that sound like it was a flatulent.
Yes, yeah. No, Chris Hayes isn't in the studio, Caleb. I don't think we have mystery booms without him. Poor little guy, but anyway, we could speculate all day about exactly what this means. The bottom line, and this goes back to what we were talking about late last year with over-the-horizon technologies, and in truth, yes, some of the mystery booms that have been reported. There's probably a lot more going on up there in the upper atmosphere than we realize. I want to, if we can fit it in, if we have time, I want to revisit actually some mystery aerial phenomena from the last few decades and then come into one that actually kind of brings it all full circle in relation to national defense and the concerns presented by UFOs, unidentified flying objects. And if you're still one of those who is beholden to that alien idea, when I say that word, I want you to unwind, unlearn, empty your cup. For all you new listeners out there, because when I say UFO, it means precisely what it was intended to mean, dating all the way back to the 1950s. Unidentified flying object, not spaceship. We're dealing with a lot of UFOs these days, and one launched by China. We don't know what it was. We don't know what the implications will be, but we should keep our eyes on that. Now, with that said, there have been a couple of interesting reports lately of strange noises that have been reported. You know, Caleb, one location of mystery noises lately has been Belfast, Northern Ireland, where a strange siren-like noise has been recorded. Actually, it's been reported numerous times. Now, the sound was recorded most recently by a YouTube user who operates under the name Python Guy. I don't want to speculate about why he calls himself that. But he discussed with commenters on his account that an identical sound had been heard in the Newton Abbey area previously. Also, this has been heard over West Belfast. I want you now at home to hear what this sounds like. This is what Python Guy recorded and what many in Northern Ireland have said that they have heard of the last several months. Now, according to the Python Guy, this was heard for more than an hour, just this loud, shrieking, ringing emanating from the sky. So the question is, what the hell is that? Now, it is indeed strange, and no one seems to have an answer just yet as to what it is, but there have been reports of everything from animals disturbed by this. He had claimed that it seemed that birds, when they were flying while this noise was being made, were dipping and diving and almost slamming into the ground when the sound was at its highest. Okay, I want to skip ahead to something that Caleb will no doubt remember. Do you remember, Caleb, a few years ago, and you even heard this once yourself as we've talked about this and we've covered these mystery noises in nature a few times already in the last few years, there was a strange metallic scraping noise. Some liken it to being an injured animal or something that sounded like that. Some have, you know, compared it to whale song. Let me allow you, now, the listeners at home, to hear what was recorded over Terrace, British Columbia, just on May 7th of this year. I mean, isn't that eerie? Caleb, is that anything like what you heard a couple of years ago over there in Candler?
The thing I heard was a lot lower pitched, and it didn't necessarily sound like a tone. It just sounded like a huge... It honestly sounded just like a huge airship.
A huge... Boy, that's always comforting.
Yeah.
A huge airship. You know, again, we have put together... We're so fascinated by this here at the Gray Alien Report that we have put together an entire site devoted to scientific analysis of the mystery noises heard in nature. The website is mysterybooms.com. If you head over to mysterybooms.com, you'll notice that we've got a lot of different reports. And here's a little funny synchronicity, Caleb, that ties in with all of this. One of the stories that we carried last week had talked about a mystery boom, a loud explosion, a puff of smoke, and animal disturbance. There were dogs that were acting extremely erratic in the area. And this was reported near a town outside of Somerset in the UK called Wookie. W-O-O-K-E-Y. Now, the sound that you just heard that was recorded in Terrace, British Columbia, had been recorded by a woman. Her name was Karen Wookie. Same spelling, but halfway across the world. Rather interesting, I think. Synchronistic, yes. Does it actually hold any meaning? Who knows? Cat on a bowling ball or into the world? You decide. Coming around to a few other developments in the news right now, and this is one that certainly has piqued my interest right here, or piqued my interest, as in peeking aliens from behind a glass case in a museum. Did you hear the one about the teen scientist who had found cancer-killing molecules in a purported superfood? Now, you know, we're all looking for, of course, cures for cancer and for these other detrimental diseases. And Caleb also knows that when you walk into my house, it looks something like a science lab. There are chemistry, you know, apparatus all around. There is a large telescope. I've got physics textbooks and things. I'm truly an amateur scientist and one who is very passionate about discovery. And never take for granted where a discovery may come from. Oliver Cloutier was one guy who had stumbled onto something recently, very interesting, and all by virtue of his mom bringing home something and claiming that it had health benefits. What she'd brought home were chia seeds. She brought back a home or a bag of these back to her house after a shopping trip, and had said that they had these innumerable health values. So her son, 18 years old, decided to take his mother's word and began investigating. Now, Cloutier explained to the Quebec AM host Susan Campbell this past week that as a chemistry student, he began analyzing the composition and molecular structure of the chia seeds. Then he moved on to the history of the chia seed, looking at how the ancient Mayans and the Aztec cultures, more than 5,000 years ago, utilized these, not only for nutrition, but also in their ceremonies. He said, I found that my mom was right, and that chia seeds have not only some amazing nutritional value, but there was a special type of molecule in chia seeds that can be extracted and tested to treat cancer. He found that certain extracts taken from chia seeds seem to possess cancer-fighting characteristics. For instance, they inhibit the proliferation of cancer cells, and they can also promote cancer cell death, particularly in a form of chemo-resistant colon cancer. The cells are called HCT116. He said, I was flabbergasted. It was a really, really great feeling because I totally was not expecting to have those kind of results. Which is so cool. An 18-year-old kid. He won a science fair project for this. Folks, he may have found a new way using an ancient Mesoamerican foodstuff to fight cancer. And this is truly amazing. Now, chia seeds, Caleb, you know, of course, I've taken... I don't know. Do you know this? I've actually taken interest in chia seeds recently. I'm fascinated with these little guys. I mean, they're about the size of sesame seeds, a little darker in color. But they're hydrophilic. And chia seeds are capable of absorbing up to 27 times, according to some studies, their weight in water. And so what happens is they actually form a mucus-like kind of a gel on their exterior. And so they look kind of like tadpole, you know, or frog eggs. That's, it may sound gross, but again, the ancient Aztecs and the Maya used these to sustain themselves. They happen to be, in fact, one of the... No, I think actually the highest plant source of omega-3s that you can find. I was so impressed by this study, I actually went online and I ordered chia seeds today, organic chia seeds, because now I want to try. I want to give it a shot, you know? And I'll no doubt be conducting experiments in Lab B down the hall there, Caleb, so you get to come over and be my little test monkey in the laboratory.
Well, I will only participate if I can eat them and make the inside of my stomach look like Bob Ross's head.
I hope you can do that. Yeah, and that's right. You're absolutely right. The chia seeds are the very same, which, starting in the 1980s, you know, the famous chia pets. You hear about these? Yeah, the little seeds that you would plant to create a chia pet. Same guys. Who knew that they might actually offer a cure for things like cancer, as well as nutritional benefits? Incredible stuff. You know, the things that you learn every day. It's just really, truly remarkable. So I wanted to change gears a little here, Caleb, and get into, in advance of what we're going to be talking about in the next hour, talk about some UFO stuff. But first, I've been promising, and we didn't get to it last week, so I'm going to go to some listener emails here before we move on to some UFO talk. Trenton writes, Micah, I listened to the most recent edition of the show and was baffled by the incoherent babbling. Oh, of the respondent, that is, who went on and on with repeated references to fast food. It was that critic that had written into the email, or with an email. So, hey, nice to hear that the incoherent babbling didn't have to do with me for once, huh? He said, I consider the Grailian Report the finest program of its genre. He said, I appreciate your centrist view and have understandably little time for the lunatic left or the rigid skeptics. I listen to a wide and varied array of podcasts covering the supernatural, the paranormal, mysterious, including The Unexplained with Howard Hughes. I love that guy, by the way. Open Minds, Paratalk podcast, The Paranormal Report. Hey, you know what? One of those two guys on The Paranormal Report is a genius. I think his name is Jim Harold, yeah. But he says The Grailian Report, of course, is a standout. And he says, I don't want to turn into fast food babbler. I love this.
Although the Hamburglar did get a new face this week.
Wow. Did he really?
Oh, my God. Yeah, they revamped for a new 2015 version of the Hamburglar. He looks like some sort of weird, like...
Alien? A Roswell alien?
No, just like a I don't know.
Caleb, would you find a picture and pop that in the chat room for me?
He looks like a sexual deviant.
Well, the original Hamburglar did, too. Nothing's changed.
I described earlier the original Hamburglar as looking like a Cabbage Patch Kid chain gang member.
Oh, my God. So Trenton writes, he says, you know, so in closing, I just want to express how frustrating it is, the clandestine nature of the UFO phenomena. What we are really in need of is some sort of interstellar wake-up call or maybe a cosmic shock from somewhere that would no doubt whatsoever leave the mainstream media convinced once and for all that we are not alone. Bring on disclosure if indeed there is anything to disclose. I strongly suspect there is. With kind regards, Trenton. Thank you for writing, Trenton. Doris writes, Dear Mr. Hanks, I'm a professor at George Mason University in Fairfax, Virginia. One of the courses I teach has students look at the evidence for various extraordinary beliefs. The emphasis is on thinking critically and evaluating evidence rather than just believing or disbelieving based on preconceptions. Hey, Doris, I like this already. In my opinion, the knee-jerk skeptics are no more scientific than the unquestioning believers. Hey, Doris, I agree. I appreciate that your programs seem to take a similar stance of open-minded skepticism. Yeah, you know, and I can't claim any patent on that. It's known as Pyrrhonist philosophy, withholding judgment in the absence of evidence. It goes all the way back to ancient Greece. No one exercised or says that I have students complete involves drawing an alien. Almost all of them draw the alien from communion, even though those who claim to know nothing about UFOs and possible alien visitation seem to do the same. I'm interested in evaluating their drawings, but to do so, it would be helpful to know if anyone has ever looked at the evolution of our conceptions of ETs. It seems to me that in the popular imagination, we've moved from fishbowl helmets and antennae to the prototypical gray, but I'm certain I'm not the first to wonder about the cultural influences in this area. Adora says, you seem to have broad-ranging knowledge in the field. Do you know of any websites, books, articles, anything that consider this issue? I will be most appreciative of any information you can provide. Very truly yours, Doris Davis. Now, I responded to this email and I asked her permission to read it here on the air because what I propose that we do is put this out to the Graylian listenership. Kind of like the promoters of the Roswell slides didn't do with what they had. Because no man is an island. And what I hope is that those of you out there listening, not me, not Caleb, not Race Hobbs, but somebody who listens to this program, I hope maybe you can send along some information. If you do have info with regard to what Doris has just asked about, if you'd email me info@graylianreport.com, or if it's easier to remember, info@micahhanks.com. Both emails come right to Rome, which is here, me, sitting in this chair in a dark hole in the ground. But I'll pass that along to Doris, respectfully, and I respect and appreciate anybody who would be happy to contribute that information. Finally, Rick writes, Micah, I produce the Evolution Talk podcast, and I'm also a Graylian X subscriber. I thoroughly enjoy all your content. Well, thank you very much, Rick. He says, one thing that I'm continuously impressed with is the sound that you have achieved for vocals. Would you mind my asking what equipment you currently use for your vocal setup? I'm always looking for ways to improve Evolution Talk, and while I've been happy with my current setup, your production values are consistently outstanding. Hope this email finds you well. Cheers, Rick Coste. Hey, Rick, thanks for that, by the way. And, you know, those of you at home, you should probably run out and check out the Evolution Talk podcast now. I recommend that you do, as I plan to do. Caleb, what's that mic you're using over there, pal?
Sure, SM7B.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I think I know somebody else who uses one of those. Race. Race. Are you there? Hobbs. Hobbs. Maybe we lost him.
He got eaten by the dog, too.
Yeah, exactly. Or he got eaten by the mailman. Race.
Hobbs.
There he is. what mic are you using there, bud?
I'm back on the SM7B.
Yeah, back on?
Represent.
Wait, hold on. So both you guys are using it. What, had you switched to something else?
Yeah, well, I had the SM58 on for a short while.
Really? A 58?
Yeah, I was using the 58.
Why?
Well, I had to get a new mic boom.
Oh,
so,
I see.
You know. I had to improvise just a bit.
Caleb and I use SM58s on stage with Nitrogress. I'm actually, you know, what's funny is among podcasters, which is, I can't believe we've never talked about this on this show. Being a podcast, we've never talked about the podcasting aspect of it. Well, it's a live radio show that happens to also be a podcast, I should say. But, you know, a lot of guys prefer the SM7B like Caleb and Race use. Art Bell, of course, is a hardcore advocate of using the Heil PR40, which Jim Harold uses, which Cam and Kyle use. I know that Graham of Grimerica uses that. Leo Laporte also uses that microphone. I think that Cliff Ravenscraft uses it. Pat Flynn uses it. I mean, it is truly the microphone among pros, and I plan to buy one at some point, but you know, I've been so attached to this particular mic that I use for years, and I often am asked, what is the mic that you use? And I've never revealed that on this program, and I'm not going to today. But I'm just kidding with you. Yeah, this is the MXL V900. And if you've never heard of this microphone, I want you to go online right now and look this thing up. The MXL V900. It looks like something out of War of the Worlds. It looks like a great big... Seriously, and Race, I think, has seen this guy. I've actually lugged it out with me to a few of the events that I go to. So some people in the community have actually seen me using this microphone, and people are like, wow, that thing looks like an old-time radio microphone.
It looks like a cheese grater.
Yes, it looks like a cheese grater. It also looks kind of like an electric shaver, like circa 1977, when they were, you know, were as big as like a whole ham that you use to shave your face. But this is a great microphone. It is actually a condenser microphone, but it is a close pattern condenser microphone. And I'm often asked by people, you know, Micah, would you give us some tips about podcasting? You've been doing this for years. You know, your show sounds really good. Can you give us some tips about what you do? What kind of equipment do you use? Man, we've got a lot. Look at this. You know, I wish those of you at home
He's doing it straight into an iPhone, kids. Don't listen to him.
Actually, my setup is actually kind of similar to what Race uses there at Master Control. But if you want to know, this is something else I haven't talked about a lot. I am about 45,000 words into a book about podcasting, because apart from all the stuff we talk about on this show, I love podcasting. And for those of you, I plan to make a completely affordable, completely accessible podcasting book in which I say, if you have questions and I didn't address them in this book, email me and I will get back to you. That is the scope of what I hope to do, because there are a lot of great sites. I mean, I mentioned Pat Flynn and Cliff Ravenscraft, Jim Harold, in fact, too. There are a lot of pros who blog about podcasting, who do videos and who do podcasts about podcasting, who talk about all that they do, and yet I will listen to those shows, and over the years, there have been questions I've had that were not answered. And so I thought, you know, I need to answer those questions for the next guy who comes along and wants to know, you know, basic stuff about podcasting. And I'm going to tell you right now, we're putting together a book that I hope will be out by midsummer that is going to answer those kind of questions and also talk a little bit about the art of talk, the podcasting pizzazz that goes into really making a good show, and how to make one sound good without having to spend $950 on a package that's going to let you, you know, self-assemble a studio in your home. You don't have to spend that kind of money to have a great sounding show. In fact, I think Caleb probably, well, no, I don't know. You may actually have $950 invested in your home studio, which is funny because your studio is great, and yet you come over here and you ride 45 minutes on an elevator every week to come down into the bunker and bring your own microphone just so you can sit here and talk about this sort of stuff with me.
Just so I can sit here and sound wonderful.
Oh, listen to him.
Although my voice is complete crap.
No, it's not at all. I think, you know, he sounds good. No, nobody sounds like Race Hobbs, though. We all wish we had Hobbo's voice.
Oh, it's all in the equipment.
Yeah, right.
He's got an octaver on that thing.
We'll let all that go in the book, Micah.
Yeah, well, you know, and I hope that truly, you know, folks will be able to learn something from it. But, you know, in addition to that, I hope you'll learn something from this program. We have not got a whole lot of time. And we got to cut out to the break a little early so that we can make room on the other side of the break for the next hour. So I want to touch on something that has baffled and behooved me the last few years. Let's go back in time to the early 1990s. There were what were described as the Belgian Triangles reported. This was big-time news in the UFO circles. On the night of March 30th, one of the callers reporting a UFO was a captain of the National Police in Pinson of the Belgian Air Force headquarters. He decided to make a serious effort to verify the reports. In addition to the visual sightings of two radar installations, one radar at Glans, southeast Brussels, which is part of the NATO defense group, and one at Simmerzake, west of the capital, which controls the military and civilian traffic of the entire Belgian territory. The range of these two radars, by the way, was about 300 kilometers, which is more than enough to cover the area where the reports had taken place. Headquarters at that time had determined that there were some very precise studies that were needed during that 55-minute period that would transpire to eliminate the possibility of prosaic explanations for radar images. I want to read a little bit of an excerpt of what happened that night. At 0005 hours, the order was given to two F-16s to take off and find an intruder in the airspace. The lead pilot concentrated on his radar screen, which at night is his best organ of vision. The F-16 is equipped with very sophisticated equipment, including chase radar, which is not fixed directly ahead of the airplane, but makes a wide search in an arc of 90 degrees left and right of the nose. Now, suddenly the two fighters spotted the intruder that had been detected on radar, for which they were scrambled. On their radar screens, and appearing like a little bee dancing on the scope, using their joysticks like a video game, the pilots ordered the onboard computers to pursue the target, and as soon as their lock-on was achieved, a diamond shape occurred, which was, of course, to indicate to the pilots that from this point on, the F-16s would remain tracking the object automatically. Now, before the radar had locked on for 6 seconds, the object that was being tracked by the F-16s had sped up from initial velocity of 280 kilometers per hour to 1,800 kilometers per hour, while descending from 3,000 meters to 1,700 meters in 1 second. I want to point out to you that this acceleration corresponds to about 40 Gs. Now listen, a human can handle about 8 Gs. This thing moved at about 40. Think about that. The trajectory of the object was extremely disconcerting. It arrived at 1,700 meters in altitude. Then it dove rapidly toward the ground in an altitude under 200 meters, and in doing so escaped from the radars of the fighters and the ground units at Glons and Semersake. The maneuver took place over the suburbs of Brussels, which are so full of man-made lights that the pilots lost sight of the object beneath them, but those on the ground did not, and many reported seeing a large, dark triangle with white, green, and red light, and a central red light. There were, over the course of several months, some 800 reports of whatever this object was. And let me tell you something right now. Those triangles are still seen. There is a report I've hoped to get to for weeks. We haven't had time. And at some point, I want to spend a little time about it, talking about the fact that several years ago, George W. Bush's Texas ranch was buzzed by a similar craft that was capable of hovering and then moving at astounding speed. This thing entered airspace that no aircraft in their right mind, had they been of U.S. origin, would have entered, and defied all physical laws of any known aircraft to exist today. Put that in your pipe and smoke it. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Roswell slides here on the Graylian Report.
The Graylian Report. The unusual, weird news, anomalies, exopolitics. It's beyond the fringe, where conspiracy theory can become conspiracy fact. This is the Graylian Report with your host, Micah Hanks.
And welcome back. I am Micah Hanks, and this is the Graylian Report. As promised, I want to spend the next hour, and this will be the last time that we're going to spend a significant amount of time talking about this, but we're going to look at the Roswell slides situation. It's been something that has certainly been a point of contention among those in the research community, not just for the last several days. I mean, it's been this way for months. I think there are lessons to be learned. We're going to look at all of that here in a moment. And over the course of the weekend, even during the holiday, I was talking with people. I'd been contacted late last week by my good friend Kyle Filson from Expanded Perspectives. And he and Cam had reached out to Red Pill Junkie, who was going to be at the event in Mexico City, the big reveal as it relates to the Roswell slides. And Kyle had said, you know, listen, we're going to be talking with him on Sunday. If you got a little time, you should join us. And I'm very glad that I was able to. And of course, Red Pill had a very busy weekend because I think, gosh, he was on the Paracast with Gene and Chris. He was also a guest on Radio Mysterioso, along with one of the gentlemen we're going to hear from here a little later in the hour, Mr. Paul Kimball, who I'd reached out to yesterday afternoon and asked if I could get him on my show. He was also on Radio Mysterioso. I don't know if that program, I listened to the live stream, I don't know if it's been posted online yet, if Greg has got that up or not. Either way, soon he will. And without further ado, right now, I want to get into some of the conversation from yesterday that I have expressed a permission by in Texas, Cam and Kyle, to replay a bit of for you here. I think it's going to give you some good perspective on what you're about to hear later in the program. What we'll get into with Paul Kimball.
I know that Micah's into these things. Micah, you saw the photographs, right?
Yeah, absolutely. As a matter of fact, at present, higher resolution images. Now, granted, we assumed that while Miguel was there in Mexico City at the event, as well as Richard Dolan and others, the streaming version of the event carried online that was a pay-per-view stream, essentially. Many people, including our friend Chase Kletsky, actually paid an access to that. It was assumed, and correctly so, that people would be grabbing screen grabs of the image that was displayed. And those appeared online that evening. But since then, better quality images, maybe not the highest resolution, but I would at least say at this point, higher resolution images have been made available on the website, which is slideboxmedia.com, that is essentially the site hosting the Kodachrome documentary. I've got that image up in front of me right now, and I'm looking at the, again, what is now more obvious than ever before, you know, a mummy. And I just want to say that, you know, based on what, you know, Miguel was talking about and a lot of the questions that he had and his questions about the logic that was being applied by the people who were promoting this, you know, I mean, I fundamentally agree and felt that there were a lot of conclusions that were being leapt to by people. You know, again, the strangest of them being that, is I believe you said, Miguel, that someone had said that they thought that this thing had avian characteristics or something that were non-mammal. In the lineage of all life on planet Earth, I've never ever once seen anything that was so obviously humanoid and hence so obviously mammalian in my life that supposedly qualified experts tried to make a case against. But this does remind me of a similar case a few years ago that Jaime Maussan was involved with, in which it was probably something akin to a probably a little, I don't think it was a howler monkey. I think it was actually a little macaque.
Oh, yeah. What was that called? The metapec? What was that?
The metapec alien. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember I wrote a blog about this saying this is obviously a monkey that either was, you know, mummified and found or possibly that it had been killed and skinned. I mean, I didn't want to have to, you know, bring the obvious, you know, disconcerting aspects of that, you know, in a public forum down to a discussion about animal abuse. But I mean, you know, because that was speculative. We didn't know what the fate of the monkey was, but nonetheless, it was so obviously a monkey, you know. And the thing is that Jaime Maussan at that time when I talked about this, Miguel, you were the one who even brought to my attention. You said, ah, and I just got to speak very frankly here. I've met Maussan very briefly at one of the UFO conferences. I've seen the kinds of things he's involved himself in terms of promotion of UFOs. I think he's a guy who's got a genuine interest in this, but like a lot of researchers, there are many who are, you know, enthusiastic promoters who I think have a genuine, honest interest in this, like Maussan, but they're not necessarily qualified experts, and they're certainly not individuals who are maybe going about things in terms of you know, the highest forms of ethics when it comes to billing and promoting something to the public. They're more willing to get something out there and speculate about what it is and try and withhold certain information that might be contrary to that speculation or supposition, you know, for purpose of being able to sensationalize something. And so the minute Jaime Maussan got involved with this Roswell slides thing, you know, I was ready to write it off, which is what was so disturbing to me about the fact that Richard Dolan became involved, because I want to be very clear. I consider Rich a friend. Rich is a man of integrity. I'm not holding him.
Yeah, so do I. Yeah.
Yeah. We both, you know, Miguel and I know Rich pretty well. We've had talks with him. We've drank coffee with him. You know, I've been on his show and he's been on mine. Let there be no question about, you know, my friendship and my respect for Richard Dolan. And I should also point out is there are a lot of people out there trying to drag him into this and say that, well, you know, Rich, he was on stage. He was promoting this too. Rich, within minutes of the end of that event, had gone on Coast to Coast AM, and he was saying on Coast to Coast, he was being asked some very pointed questions by George Norrie, and he said, if I had to bet on it being a hoax, I wouldn't say it's a hoax, but I'm not really, really ready to commit to the idea that this is something related to Roswell. So, you know, Rich was trying to carry himself, I think, as ethically and as carefully and as skeptically as he could, but I think that he, like a lot of people, was probably under the impression that based on the testimony given by the experts that presented at this event, that, well, these qualified experts saw this, so maybe there's something more to it.
Let me point out, Micah, that I had the chance to briefly talk to Richard this week, you know, during the interview that Gene and Chris gave with me, the interview that they had me with for the Paracast. Gene managed to have Richard for a few minutes, you know, to chime in and give his opinion. And I had the chance to ask Richard whether he had had the chance to speak in private with the experts, you know, to learn more about their intentions, their personality, and why they decided to get involved in all this. Richard said that he did in fact have the chance to talk to these guys, but due to the language barrier, apparently these individuals weren't really proficient in speaking in English. You know, he had a very limited conversation with them, right? But nevertheless, he felt that both were credible. You know, were being objected, especially Jesus Salce Benitez. And to be honest, I also felt that of the three individuals involved, the three so-called experts, he struck me as the one more credible than the rest. But nevertheless, I still would have liked to ask him whether he would have accepted Mao San's invitation to participate in this whole affair had he had the chance to see the slides before traveling to Mexico. And that wasn't the case at all. He accepted the slides to participate before seeing the slides. I think that the reason to doing so because Don Schmidt and Tom Curry convinced him, and maybe that's my opinion, that was the mistake that he made.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to be the case. And I got to point out something else about these qualified experts. You know, you got to be very careful taking an expert's opinion on something mm-hmm. when there's so much obfuscation like what we've seen here. And by that, what I mean is, yeah, sure, obviously some individuals were allowed to look at this image, but as I want to talk about here in a minute, and this is something that, as far as I know, this is absolutely breaking as of 3:46 p.m. East Coast time, Mother's Day Sunday. And I'm sitting here talking with you guys about this. I've been going back and forth with Paul Kimball, Race Hobbs, Greg Bishop, Chris Rutkowski, most of the morning and afternoon. This website has been put up, and this breaking information about a new analysis of this photograph. Have you guys been following this development?
Yeah, a little bit. You were talking to me this morning about it. And I've been watching. I've been keeping my eye on it, and it's pretty interesting. Tell everybody what you're talking about.
I want to give a little bit of an overview because I think that the thing is that this puts in the proper context. I think maybe in terms of archaeology and anthropology, what we're dealing with. Whereas taken out of that context, or maybe in the case of the Roswell slide, never having been properly put into that context, it's easy to see why maybe a biologist. Or, you know, even a historian like Richard Dolan would come into this, look at this outside of the proper historical and scientific context, look at it and with that predisposed idea toward we may be looking at an anomaly, what is this? Then we try and come to a determination about it. I think that that's what leads to a lot of the breakdowns in communication and a lot of the misunderstandings about what we may be dealing with. But the essential story unfolds like this. Race Hobbs of the KGRA Network brought it to my attention this morning that there were new claims that one of the placards associated with the photograph was a hoax.
Oh.
And I thought, okay, that's a strange claim. So he linked, and actually it was late last night that he sent me this link, but I was traveling last night and I was actually in Atlanta. And at the slideboxmedia.com, which hosts the site, you know, that promotes the Kodachrome documentary about this, there is a series of links at the top that discuss the documentary, what is being referred to now as Kodachrome Slide 11, which is, of course, the famous slide with the body. And then there's a link now that says Real Placard, and it shows an image of it. You scroll down the page, and it actually states the following that I found very interesting. This apparently from Dew and presumably those who are involved, you know, with promoting this. So, you know, we'll collectively refer to this as the owners, but, of course, us. At this point, we'd presume this also involves Jaime Masson, you know, Tom Carey, Don Schmidt, etc. At the side, it reads, the Roswell slides, and if anyone wants to look at this, by the way, it's one word, slideboxmedia.com/placard. And it reads at that page, the Roswell slides research group fake placard. And they have that with an image on the left. It says, this is the photoshopped original that the group is claiming they worked before they claimed deblurring. And then they show the original scanned image during the slide box or shown on the slide box site. What they're claiming here, as you scroll down the page, it says the Roswell Research Group claimed to have deblurred the placard, but we have our doubts because we have been unable to replicate their results using the same software. We're in contact with the software company and are requesting their analysis of the authenticity of the group results. And what we see here is we see a placard that it's still blurry, but you can now clearly read out the lettering on the card that rests next to what presumably is the right leg of the mummy. And this is what the card actually reads. It actually, I'm doing my best just to read this from the page here, but there's actually a translation that appears at the Roswell Slides Research Group page, which we'll get to in a moment. It says, mummified body of 2-year-old boy. And that can very clearly be read here. And then at the bottom, you can also see what appears to be a name with two initials, a name, and then San Francisco, California. Hmm. So they say, we suspect the owners of the image at their website, we suspect that they, the Roswell Slides Research Group, created their own modified version. So at this point, I was actually asking, who is this Roswell Slides Research Group? I didn't even know that there was somebody calling themselves this or operating under that. Interestingly, this is a group that is composed of the following individuals: Jose Antonio Caravaca, Isaac Coey, Nab Latour, the French skeptic, Lance Moody, Tim Printy, Kurt Collins, Tim Herbert, my friend Paul Kimball, Giles Fernandez, another friend of mine, Chris Rutkowski, Roger Glassell, and then also Stephen Smiles Lewis. And then we've also got guys who are associated with them, including Felipe Hernandez, Aaron Goulias, who I've had on my program before, and, of course, our buddy Nick Redfern. A lot of these folks are kind of associated with this. At their website, which is roswellslides.com, they offer an interesting rebuttal. They show, first of all, the enhanced image, and then they also offer their translation of the full text, which reads as follows: mummified body of two-year-old boy. At the time of burial, the body was clothed in a cotton shirt. Burial wrappings consisted of these small cotton blankets. So doing a search for those terms, as well as San Francisco, California, because it says at the bottom, loaned by Mr. And then they can't decipher the name of San Francisco, California. This is where things began to take an interesting turn. Based on, and again, I want to point out that while they're claiming that this is a Photoshop job, that is so utterly foolish to me, because if you go over to the UFO Chronicles website, Frank Warren did his own independent analysis with the same software, and he came to the same determination. I've got, I believe, his determination about what the card reads. He says, his translation rather reads, mummified body of two-year-old boy. And then he also gives the this may have been Kurt Collins who actually did this analysis at the time of the burial, and then he gives the same information I just gave. So Frank Warren's got that over there on his website, and he talks about this as well. So it seems, and then Leslie Gunter finally on Facebook earlier today had also pointed out that she had also been following this and saw that there were others who used this software. I believe the actual deblurring software that they used is called Smart Deblur. Leslie Gunter also pointed out that there are others who've used this program. It's commercially available, and that they've gotten the same results, and they can clearly see now a mummified body of two-year-old boy. So I started digging around based on this translation, talking about the time of the burial. The body was clothed in cotton shirt and burial wrappings. These wordings are pretty distinct. And then the fact that someone from San Francisco, California donated this to this collection. We haven't determined where it was, but by digging around online, I was able to find a website at the Mesa Verde National Park or pertaining to the Mesa Verde National Park at npshistory.com. On that website, there's an article from September 1938, Volume 3, Number 1 of the Mesa Verde Notes. I want to read the relevant text here from you. According to the count of finger and nose prints on the glasses, the most popular exhibits in the Park Museum are the Spruce Tree House Diorama and the Case of Bones that show the diseases of the Cliff Dwellers. The glass on the diorama is smudged so much that it has to be washed every 2 hours. So it sounds, okay, like we have the name of a museum. Why do I link this one to it? Next paragraph reads as follows. A splendid mummy was received by the Park Museum recently when Mr. S.L. Palmer Jr. of San Francisco returned one that his father had taken from the ruins in 1894. The mummy is that of a two-year-old boy and is in an excellent state of preservation. At the time of burial, the body was clad in a slip-over cotton shirt, three small cotton blankets. Fragments of these are still on the mummy. Remarkably similar text. And so I have to say that when we read this and we look at this, it seems fairly obvious to me that what we're dealing with is a description of the same. I went back to the enhanced image that's at the Roswell Slides website, and you can almost read it right there next to the San Francisco. You can see that there are two initials, and then Palmer. And the second initial is quite clearly the L. The first one, because the blur looks a lot like a C, but it's, you know, safe to assume probably that is indeed an S.L. Palmer of San Francisco, California, the very same that was mentioned there in the Mesa Verde Notes from September of 1938. So at this point, I'm going to link all this over at my website, MicahHanks.com, and let people look for themselves. But I am almost without a doubt convinced that the mummy in the photograph is actually a mummy that was on display at that museum in question here, the Park Museum, and that the mummy was donated by S.L. Palmer Jr. of San Francisco. His father had taken it from the Mesa Verde ruins in 1894, and that the mummy described here and shown in the photograph are one and of the same.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what it looks like.
Now I'm going to enjoy my coffee.
Now, what pisses me off about all this is that the Roswell slide team managed to do in less than 48 hours what these other guys were allegedly not able to do in over 3 years.
Exactly. Why was that? Why did nobody? They had all this time to analyze this photograph. No, none of them tried to de-blur it. And by the way, the information about the source of the mummy. I've been in touch with Paul Kimball to see if he actually, if those guys have determined this themselves. If not, I've passed that information along to him, and I've just received a message from him. I haven't read it, but that information I've passed along to them as well, and I'm hoping they'll get that up on the site.
So 20 years ago, basically, they found these slides, and like we said, it's taken this long, and nobody did anything with them. It was because nobody, what it was is they laid there. Somebody finally was like, you know what? I wonder if I can make some money off of them now.
Well, you know,
now's the perfect time to try to fool somebody. Maybe they won't remember where this thing actually came from.
Yeah, let's throw it out there. And Adam Dew were clearly in this thing for the money. I mean, he gave Adam Dew gave an interview on Open Minds. I think Alejandro Rojas was the one who interviewed him, and he admitted on the record, you know. He tried to promote to show it in the United States, but no one was able to give him the amount of monetary compensation he was expecting. Right? Mm-hmm. You know, I think that he said that there was one prominent magazine that wanted to publish the slides, but they weren't willing to give him any money, so he turned them down. And here comes then Mao San, who says, no, we're going to show them in Mexico, and we're going to have this big event and the National Auditorium with a live audience of 10,000 witnesses, and we're going to change history. And I'm sure the guy said, yeah, whatever, man. So just get me the money I want.
Yeah. By the way, I just, since I'm coming back into the conversation a little late here, I took a minute to read this message from Paul Kimball, and he's going to join me tomorrow to talk about this a little on the Graylian.
Ooh, that's going to be great.
Yeah, everything I've just, you know, thought I'd crack the case on, I just brought it to Paul's attention, and he actually has said that as for the Mesa Verde thing, yeah, Anthony Bregaglia posted it yesterday at his website, so apparently I wasn't the first to get to that.
Bregaglia, the one who has been, you know, ranting about all the naysayers and skeptics who have been criticizing the Roswell slides.
Now, it's very interesting. See, exactly, that's just it. Bregaglia, of all people, has been the one who apparently yesterday posted it on his site, and I'm thinking, so the guy who had been making the big case for the slide's authenticity is now the very one who apparently, even before me, had access to that information. I had to do a bit of digging around, and I was able to find that information in about 45 minutes. Bregaglia had it up on his site yesterday. To that point, here's what Paul Kimball says. He claims he just discovered it, but that seems awfully suspicious to me. Who knows with him? It's either, you know, he just basically kind of speculates about it. But, you know, again, I think that the question that's being raised, and I'll ask Paul more about it tomorrow, is did somebody have this information beforehand and went forward with this? And furthermore, how would someone have had that information? I don't want to speculate or make any accusations against Bregaglia or anybody else, but, you know, it wasn't hard for us, you know, after the images were released to determine the origins of this mummy. These guys who had this set of images, you know, at very least they had months to work with it, but more likely years. Mm-hmm. They weren't able to determine that, and yet when the, you know, proverbial fecal matter hits the spinning turbine here, all of a sudden that information is posted on the very website of one of the big promoters, not one of the directly involved promoters, but one of the advocates, I should say, i.e. Bregaglia. To me, it doesn't seem necessarily suspicious so much as it just, well, yeah, I guess it does seem kind of suspicious, but it also seems just very strange to me, and it makes me question how much some of the individuals may have known beforehand going into this, in which case we look at it, and I think this is what Paul Kimball's asking too, you know, did these people have access to information that explained this away and promoted it as being some falsehood nonetheless? That seems to be at least a strong possibility, because how could we really chalk this all up to incompetence, you know?
Yeah. Okay.
Can you?
No.
But honestly, dude, if anybody has issues with anything I've said here, I'm going to say, hey, you know what? Listen, you're the ones who are under the fire right now for promoting something that was obviously bogus, you either have to account for your incompetence in being able to discern and to solve this, or you have to be able to account for the fact that you did have this information and either overlooked or obfuscated with regard to your own presentation of what data you had. Because, dude, it doesn't take, a genius, a rocket scientist, to look at these slides and see what this is.
Yeah.
And then finding the proof came swiftly thereafter. Yeah, I can't believe that these guys couldn't have figured this out in the amount of time they had to do it.
Okay, so that was the conversation that we had yesterday afternoon, which I think is going to kind of set the stage for how things will play out. And as we mentioned numerous times throughout that portion, I planned, of course, to get in touch with Paul Kimball, which we will do when we return from this break here on the Graylian Report. I think it's going to tell, as Paul Harvey would have said, the rest of the story. Just not Paul Harvey. It'll be Paul Kimball here on the Graylian Report right after this.
Imagine no longer being tied down to your computer, but having the freedom to take live talk radio with you anywhere you go. TalkStream Live introduces our first ever iPhone application. The talk shows you follow now follow you, and your iPhone is now the fastest and easiest way to stay connected to the best talk radio on the internet. Let TalkStream Live transform the way you listen to radio. Listen to live talk shows 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Mobile talk radio from TalkStream Live. Now available in the iTunes App Store.
On the battlefield, there's a saying America's military men and women live by. Never leave a fallen warrior behind, ever. Off the battlefield, Wounded Warrior Project operates with the same goal. Wounded Warrior Project was created to help our men and women returning home with the scars of war, whether those scars are physical or mental. Wounded Warrior Project. We never leave a fallen warrior behind. Ever. Learn more about what we do at woundedwarriorproject.org.
From the high mountains of Appalachia, welcome back. I am Micah Hanks, and this is the Graylian Report. Now, as the last segment has already illustrated for those listening, this was a rather eventful Mother's Day weekend for those of us who were following this Roswell slides issue. There are varied opinions on this. There are a lot of, icy relations right now between different members in the research community, and probably some bruised egos just as well, and that's one reason I've said that there needs to be respectful dialogue about this. A lot of people are saying it's over, it's done, let's move on, nothing more to see here. I am always one to say that social commentary is of importance, and I think that we and those who consider themselves proponents of whatever it may be, a UFO phenomenon, I think that we have learned and have had to recognize the necessity for openness and transparency as a result of what transpired over the weekend. And, of course, these new determinations that have conclusively ended, in not just my opinion, but I think those of most who are looking at this case now, including many who had been proponents of the veracity of the Roswell slides and what the promoters were claiming appeared in them prior to all of this. So I wanted to talk to Paul Kimball and had been in touch with him throughout the day on Mother's Day, in fact, with regard to a group that he is a part of that have done their own independent analysis. This is the very one that over the weekend the owners of the purported slides have referred to as trolls and their analysis as being a Photoshop job. Quite certainly, at this point, it is not that. And so to join us and discuss that and why and how an independent group came to this determination as to the true origin of the photographs and also what they show, Paul Kimball joins us now. Paul, how you doing, brother?
Hi, Micah. Doing just fine. It's the snow is finally off the ground here in Halifax, Nova Scotia, as of last week. So it almost looks like spring now.
Snow, my gosh. See, and here I was just talking with you off the microphone about this huge thunderstorm rolling in down here over western North Carolina. I'm just hoping it doesn't knock out the power here in the bunker. But I'm glad to know that spring is finally springing where you are. And with it, as the ground thaws, I guess there are still nonetheless some pretty icy attitudes about this whole Roswell slides silliness. Now, look.
Oh, that was smooth. Oh, that was good. bravo. I applaud that. That's the kind of stuff as an entertainment industry professional. That was good.
Well,
was good.
You should expect no less than, you know, from me. But I mean,
exactly.
as I would expect no less from you. You know, that's the thing is that honestly, maybe you're just rubbing off on me. But my cynical side just wants to say we all knew this was a load of crap from day one. And I say that in truth with all respect to all parties involved. It's just we've got to be more careful with how we go about all this. And I think that you had said at some point to those who had in their possession these purported slides that we saw very blurry, grainy, sepia-tone images of for, you know, several weeks now online. You'd been saying all along, look, just give me a few minutes with the real deal. I bet you we can probably tell you what this is. That didn't happen, and that was the first problem. You want to take it from there, Paul?
Sure. From the very get-go, I mean, the one point I'd like to stress, Micah, about all of this is to contrast the behavior of what I'll call the slides promoters, and we know who they were. They were on the stage in Mexico City and working beforehand. And the group that I was a part of, we sort of called ourselves the Roswell Slides Research Group. I think that's a name I came up with because Justice Society of America was already taken. And you know, their process from the very beginning has been one of secrecy. And here's the great irony for people who claim that, you know, disclosure is being held back by secrecy on the government's part. There's involved terms such as non-disclosure agreements, and the left hand of their own group didn't know what the right hand was doing, and some people had seen the slides, and other people had not seen the full resolution slides, and all this sort of stuff. In our group, it was transparent. We were working, you know, back and forth, criticizing each other's methodologies, you know, hashing it all out amongst ourselves, nobody withholding any information, sharing information. And then when we finally got copies of the slides after the May 5th event, first through a source within the slide promoter's camp that sent a copy of the slide to one of our team members, Jose Caravaca from Spain, and then after we had done the deep blur work on that slide and had deciphered what the placard said, Adam Du, one of the key slides promoters, came out, as you said, and accused us of being trolls and faking it, which I have to say, it is true. Some of us on that team certainly would have the abilities and the connections and the technological know-how to do something like that. So, fair enough, he put up the drum scan of the actual slide, which we all said, well, thank you very much. We'll now work from this. And it took us almost no time at all to use his actual copy that he had put up to achieve the exact same results. And then what we did, because we were open and transparent, unlike the slides promoters, because we had nothing at stake other than searching for the truth.
Right.
So we had no monetary gain to make or anything like that. We put it all up on the internet, and then we did videos, both Lance Moody and Tim Printy, two members of our team, showing how it was done. Here's the software you use, Smart to Blur, and here's how you do it. And in a minute and a half, is Isaac Coy, who posted it above Top Secret, he posted a recipe. Here are the steps that you should use in order to achieve these results yourself. You can take Adam Du's scan slide and use this software and do it like this, and you'll get the exact same results. And person after person after person, from Frank Warren to Jeff Ritzman to probably some guy sitting in his mother's basement in Kansas City or Oklahoma, did the exact same thing. And everybody achieved pretty much the same results, making it clear that not only had we not faked it, but that everybody else could get these results too if they followed our methodology. And it was a methodology, here's the kicker, Micah, that was available, commercially available to anyone, including the slides promoters. And so the question I suppose that should be asked coming out of all of this to them is, why didn't they do it? And they actually claim, by the way, that several experts in photo imaging, including the Pentagon, just pause for a sigh there, had looked at these slides, had done the very best, you know, the high tech, super stuff on these slides, and had determined that they could not be read. The placard could not be read. And the placard, of course, identifies it as a mummified body of a 2-year-old boy. Well, okay, you can either believe them that they did that, in which case every expert they consulted is incompetent, which I find hard to believe, or you can say, well, perhaps they didn't actually consult those experts, they just said they did. I'll leave it up to the listeners of your show to determine which one of those two outcomes is more likely, but all I know is that when we did it, when we actually had slides, copies of the slides that you could work from, it took us a matter of hours to determine what that placard said, and from the placard, as you yourself and other people have done, you can very quickly track down the mummy and where it was, where it came from, and, you know, the case is closed. And if they had done this 2 years ago, if they had just been transparent and open source their material in a real search for the truth as opposed for profit, then this could have been settled 2 years ago. But instead, they took a different path, and, you know, I won't say unfortunately because I don't feel sorry for them at all, but if I was them, I would say, unfortunately, they now have to wear this, whether it's a question of fraud or whether it's a question of incompetence, and people, again, can make up their own minds which one of those two things was at play here. The results are clear for everybody to see. And frankly, as you say, the results should have been clear as soon as you heard the story that they were telling years ago. Or, for instance, just one example that I gave last night on Radio Mysterioso, and then I'll stop talking. You know, they claim they had this thing that the rays where the slides supposedly were the people the slides were supposedly taken by were very close friends with Eisenhower, Dwight Eisenhower, even accepting that that is true. And it was never remotely shown that that was true. But even if I'm going to let's just accept it for the sake of argument, they use that to then lead to another conclusion, which is, well, of course, that's how they got the photos. They were able to go into the super top secret bunker wherever the alien bodies were held, and because they knew Ike, and they were allowed to take pictures of these super top secret alien bodies, presumably because Eisenhower said, sure, why not? Which is ridiculous. And anybody with, I won't even say a history degree, one undergraduate class in 20th century history would know that of all the people in the 20th century least likely to allow anyone to breach security, Dwight D. Eisenhower would be in your top 10. This is, after all, the man who oversaw the D-Day invasion and right up until the point when Allied troops were landing on the beaches in Normandy had managed to keep it secret from the Germans when and where it was going to happen. So, of all people that I can think of, Eisenhower was a stickler for security. And the idea that even if he did know the Rays and they were as close as best as buddies, he would have let them in to take pictures of this alien being in a glass case with a placard. I mean, when you listen to the story, when you look at the story now in hindsight, it should be apparent that it was ridiculous from the beginning. And yet some people chose to accept it and move forward with it. And they have questions that they're now going to have to answer. But as far as we're concerned in the group, all of the questions that we were interested in answering have been answered. It's a mummified body of a 2-year-old boy. Case closed.
Absolutely. I mean, that really seems to be where we stand right now. And, you know, I've got to say, too, there's so many interesting aspects about this altogether. And there have been many people, especially those who have been observing. There have been a few of us who have been, you know, somewhat related, like Nick Redfern or myself. You know, of course, those who have been promoting it and those who have been actively trying to actually come to an independent determination. What's really interesting to me is that you guys working in that capacity actually came to your determination in part thanks to preemptively trying to expose an alternative to what the promoters were offering, to which in response Mr. Dew actually released a better quality image that actually assisted with the investigation that you guys, the Roswell Slides Research Group, were conducting. It truly, yes, ironic, but interesting also, because I think that just goes to show that from time to time, out of conflict, benefit does arrive. And I think that was one point. But, you know, of course, on the whole, a lot of people, while they say, okay, great, it's done with, we've heard enough, can we stop, it's over. Well, the reason I think it's important and meaningful to offer some commentary here and to look at this is because, in my opinion, maybe contrary to that of many, and especially those involved, Paul, I think that the end result here is really good because, although it maybe shouldn't have transpired this way, what has happened has underscored the necessity for, as you said, open source, reliable information that is shared openly, better communication, better transparency, and not this kind of this purely promotional and profiteering approach that we so often see.
I absolutely agree. If anybody actually cares about ufology, they should take a look at the two different methodologies. And the methodology employed by the slides promoters is not new. It is the methodology that ufology has, by and large, employed for decades. And you can take a look at the MJ-12 fiasco in the 1980s, for instance. When those documents first arrived, they weren't immediately released. They were like dwarves hoarding gold in The Hobbit. You know, Bill Moore, Jamie Chandra, and Stan Friedman kept them to themselves. And they can make a reasonable claim at some point that they are doing initial research. Well, that's fair enough. But at some point, that claim goes flying out the window. In particular, in that case, when Bill Moore released sort of the documents, but with portions of them blacked out that he himself had blacked out.
Right.
You know, there's a long history of this kind of... The secrecy, ironically enough, is always on the sides of the ufologists. And this is not to denigrate every ufologist. Some of them do good work. But every time you see secrecy, it's coming from people who are hoarding the information for their own reasons. The skeptical community, and I'm a guy who's sat in the middle between these two groups for over a decade.
Me now. Too.
And I find myself, over that decade, I have moved far, far closer. In fact, I consider myself in the skeptical community now because I've seen how they both groups operate. I'm still interested in the UFO phenomenon. I still think there might be something non-prosaic to it. But if I have to choose a methodology, I choose the skeptics methodology, which is open source, transparent, cooperative amongst yourselves, but also, and it's worth noting, you know, like Lance Moody, one of our skeptical members on the team, who is often derided as being this evil arch skeptic, gets along with a number of UFO researchers. He has collaborated with David Rudiak, for instance, on certain things. So it's not like we skeptics are unfriendly. Give us the information. And as Lance said last night on Radio Mysterioso, if you had these alien... I've got to stop calling them alien slides. If you had slides or photos that you actually think show an alien, right? Who would you give them to? If I had them, I would give them to skeptics. I would go find the person most likely to tear it apart, and I would say, you have a look at it first, and you tell me what you think. Because if that person came back to you and said, I don't know, then you would really have something. And if they came back to you and they said, well, here's what it is, then you could go, okay, well, I'll have a look at that. But it's what debaters or what lawyers or what even politicians would do. If you're preparing for a debate and you're running for president of the United States, you don't have somebody playing the guy on the other side who can, you don't say, just agree with everything I say, because you'll show up on the debate stage and you'll get shredded. What you do is you put a guy over there and say, great, you play, you know, the other party's candidate and rip me apart. Everything I say, attack. And that's how you realize what the other side is going to say and how you also can test the merit of your own claims. And I think that's the one thing that's been sorely lacking in ufology, is that they haven't been willing to test the merit of their own claims. And I have to say, coming out of my film, for instance, Best Evidence, back in 2007, which contains these 10 cases that ufologists had voted on as being really good cases, I challenged skeptics over the last few years to, on the RB-47 case, I challenged Tim Printy. On the Kelly Johnson case, I challenged Lance Moody. Like, explain these cases. I'm not saying I agree with their explanations, but they offered them. They did real research. They painstakingly took a look at the case, all angles of it, and they offered an explanation. And then they put it up and said, well, what do people think? And they solicited and encouraged people to give them feedback, both good and bad. That is the way, that is the kind of dialogue that you have to have. You have to remove anonymous witnesses, and you have to remove strange stories and, you know, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, I know something that you don't know kind of thing, and say, here's what we do know. We can identify this person, we can identify this document, so let's talk about those things, and let's not talk about all the other things that, you know, we have to keep hidden, or we think we have to keep hidden, or we want to keep hidden. That is the way forward. And it's not as, you know, it's not as exciting as having a new anonymous witness every week, but it's more productive. And it is the only path that can lead you to truth, whatever that truth is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and that's a funny thing to me, when we look at this sociologically. People kind of want to be members of clubs. They form little camps. I, to my core, resolutely, although there are people who constantly differ with me on this point, you know, I think I should know because I'm telling you this, you know, as most people who listen to the show know, I am a skeptic to my core. I think Greg Bishop would agree, and you just said as much yourself, with regard to your own philosophy about this, because, you know, there are these camps, I think, you know, people who so blindly are trying to prove a bias that they have, and that goes both in the believer side of things, or the believer sphere, and then also in the, what I call the modern mainstream skeptic, you know, camps. People have a bias and a predisposition, and they want to, you know, engage in bias confirmation rather than actual fact acquisition. In this case, you know, again, I think in every case, there is a need for skepticism. On the extreme side of that, you've got people who say, and there's absolutely nothing to the possible UFO reports that we've collected data about for, you know, more than half a century. I certainly right. I don't think that, you know, Paul, I don't think you think that. By the same token, no. though, looking at those reports and looking at even the really strange ones in no way suggests to me this disclosure, Roswell wreckage recovered, alien bodies at Wright-Patterson Air Force, you know, narrative that has been espoused by what I would call the mainstream UFO community for decades now. Really, if there was something to be found, you'd think that we wouldn't have to keep engaging in this nonsense, this conjecture-based attitude that we see among, I guess, that camp. And which we have continued to see. This is what we believe. You know, there was this meeting. Eisenhower, instead of going to the dentist that weekend, of course, was being briefed about all of this and just happened to have some friends who were geologists who were allowed to take pictures. You know, again, we should have more definitive evidence. And the fact that there is none, and the fact that there continues to be this case made for what probably UFOs are, or what they might be, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, you know, that says a lot in itself. So this kind of wish confirmation is what we continue to see, and that was, I think, what really hijacked this entire Roswell slides thing from the beginning. And it's so interesting to me, Paul, that it is so capable of, I think hijacking is a good word, hijacking someone's fundamental outlook on life and ideology, belief system, to the point that what was obviously, from the outset for most of us, a mummy laying on a table, a glass display case, no less, there were people who looked at that and immediately their brain went to alien. I don't think it undermines their intelligence. I think what it shows clearly is that, you know, you make yourself so beholden to a belief system in the absence of evidence, and you can absolutely convince yourself to believe virtually anything.
Sure. And there are people, I don't think there are any people within the skeptical community who are unreasonable. There are the true skeptical community. There are people, right. of course, on the far, far side mm-hmm. who will always just say, No, to everything. Mm-hmm. And to them, it's kind of a political game. It's like watching politicians. You know, if you put liberals and conservatives in the same room, they probably agree on 95% of things. But if you put them out in public, they will agree on nothing. And right. that's sort of what you're looking at here. But what you need to do, like in our group, if you look, for instance, here's the contrast. If you look at the Roswell slides promoters, all of them were what I would characterize as true believers, predisposed to believe in the extraterrestrial hypothesis, a crash at Roswell, all of that stuff. If you look at our group, some skeptics, some well-known skeptics like Tim Printy and Lance Moody. Mm-hmm. Then there were guys, in fact, we had a member of the Roswell Dream Team in our group, Chris Rutkowski, who is the guy in Canada who publishes the Canadian UFO report every year.
Absolutely.
Chris would hardly be could be labeled a debunker or an arch Phil class-like skeptic. So our group had a broad mix of people from all camps, and some of us, you know, who are definitely what I would call agnostics. And, you know, that kind of back and forth, that kind of cooperative effort, collegial is the word I used last night. And it reminded me very much of my days in university, where you would sit in a reading group or a master's seminar or something like that, and you would just bandy ideas about and eventually try and reach some sort of consensus. And that is the way forward, but that is not what we're seeing. What we're seeing is almost an evangelical-like mission to preach a certain type of gospel to people. And it's characterized best for me by Stephen Bassett in the disclosure quote-unquote movement, because yeah. his thing is, and people repeat this, it's not about lights in the sky, it's about lies on the ground. To which I would answer, no, it is about lights in the sky. It's not about lies on the ground, it's still about lights in the sky. You can't prove anything. So it's like jumping to the end of a movie before you've even watched the first 10 minutes. And, you know, there's all the other stuff that has to be dealt with first. So that's what we did. We kind of said, look, let's start from point A and let's see where it takes us. We don't know what the ending is. We had suspicions. I mean, everybody sort of thought, look, it's a mummy. But not initially, until the leaked image came out from Adam Due when he released the trailer and people could grab a scan from it a few months ago. That was the first time anybody outside their little group had seen any image. And it was at that point that everybody started to say, almost certainly a mummy. But even then, we all remained open-minded. If they could have presented proof positive that you know would show something else, we were willing to consider that. Instead, what they did was they put slides up that within hours we could show, you know, yeah, it's a mummy. You know how we know that? Because it says it's a mummy. Yeah. I mean, I don't, it's not rocket science. It's not even seventh grade introductory physical science or something where you're taking apart a paramecium. It was the most basic of basic stuff, and they couldn't even manage to do that. And here's the ultimate irony. I'll say this as a filmmaker, and Lance Moody is also in the film industry. He's an editor. So Adam Due is apparently in the film industry, although I suspect perhaps not for much longer.
Yeah.
So they actually had a guy on their team whose specialty is supposedly film and video making and all the kind of software that we actually use to decipher this in a period of hours. So they actually had a guy who could have done this, and he was the guy who had the actual slides. I'm not going to say anymore. I'm just going to let people think about that for a while and draw your own conclusions.
Oh, my God. It is baffling to me, though, Paul. I've just got to be, I mean, as blunt as I possibly can be. Really, in likelihood, there have to be one or two scenarios here. Let's be honest with everybody. Either there was no, like you said, analysis done at all, which I think catered to incompetence. And frankly, if we were to infer that, that would have to also mean that there were lies told because they claimed all this silliness about these analyses. Any rudimentary analysis should have come to the same determination that you guys did, that I came to yesterday about the origin of the mummy. And interestingly, noting that I didn't crack that case by any means, I came to this determination independently about the actual mummy. But Anthony Bregaglia, one of the chief proponents on his blog, actually came to the same determination before I did, and the reason I didn't find it is because strange, it was taken down from his blog before I actually was able to get over there and see it. Now, before it's news, the news aggregator site had actually copied it and put it up, and so I was able to get his entire statement and read that. And I think that, you know, what he said was frankly meaningful. You know, he said, you know, I think that, you know, we need to remember, you know, respect for Native American people, indigenous people, and that's obviously who this was, and a spectacle was made of it. That is a question that should be raised. I'm glad, at very least, that he raised that. Why the blog then was taken down, again, truly baffling to me, but in the camp of there being no analysis done and then lies being told, that's one possibility. The other is, of course, that, that they went around and that they did the analysis and they purposefully withheld information. Those two scenarios seem to be the most likely to me. I mean, can you think of any other way we could interpret this?
No, and I'll say two things quickly. One, I give Bregaglia no credit for doing what you did independently, what anybody would have done within hours of what we released. He had no choice. Some people have even suggested he might have known the reason why he got it so quickly is maybe they knew that beforehand. I don't know. Again, I'll let people draw their own conclusions. But he has spent years as the most vociferous promoter online, attacking us. Here's just one thing. Recently, he's gone around emailing people, calling me an alcoholic, and saying...
Calling you an alcoholic?
Yes, and saying, and this is a flat-out lie. I have no problem saying he is flat-out lying. He emailed people and said that I had called Edgar Mitchell, the astronaut, at his home, and harassed him to not go to Mexico City. I'd happily turn over my phone records. I mean, I have never spoken to Edgar Mitchell in my life, but there's Bregaglia sending these emails around saying Paul Kimball's an alcoholic, and because he had one picture that I had posted publicly years ago of me, Mac Tonies, and Nick Redford having a beer after a symposium that I had held here. I guess that made me an alcoholic. And saying I had harassed Edgar Mitchell, which is a categorical lie. So this is what they were doing both publicly and behind the scenes. We weren't engaging in that stuff. In fact, what we were doing was trying to ferret out information. So when you talk about keeping things secret, They had a witness, I use in quotation marks, a guy that we now know is named Eleazar Benavides. And he was stationed at Roswell in 1947. We've confirmed that. The only way, though, that we could actually confirm that is because we had to get the guy's real name. He's been using a pseudonym. He's been, I mean, he's appeared. He's had his face, like, not hidden in sci-fi documentaries. And so he's, you know, been publicly out there. And he was in the trailer that Adam Du released about the film he's doing about the slides. There he is, standing out in front of his house in the United States. So we got his name and we released it. We said, look, here's his real name. And within, again, hours, it was easy for us to take a look at the base yearbooks and realize, this is interesting, that in the video trailer, Du refers to him as a lieutenant, or as you Americans would say, lieutenant, mm-hmm. in 1947, which is not true. He was a PFC, a private. And he never actually rose to the commissioned officer ranks. He had a, you know, honorable career, but he was never an officer. So that is either a lie that Du told, or it was a gross, incompetent mistake, either or. But we would not have known that. Nobody would have known that if we had not released the name of this person. We got, as me in particular, an awful lot of credit. A lot of criticism from Bregaglia in particular for doing that, saying, oh, this 90-year-old man is now going to be harassed, and if he dies because of a heart attack or something, because somebody calls him, Paul Kimball and Lance Moody are responsible or whatever, which is laughable. All we wanted, you guys were the ones who put him out there in the first place. All we wanted to do was check out his story, which seems reasonable enough. So in order to do that, we have to know what his name is. And yes, I posted a photo of his house, which is easy to find. I got it off Google Earth. It's a wonderful thing, Google Earth. That's modern era that we live in.
Yeah.
And they said, well, now people will know where he lives. Well, they knew where he lived before because Adam Du showed his house in the video trailer. And as soon as you guys did all of this, and yet you're criticizing us for telling the truth. You were less than truthful. We're fully truthful. Those are every step of the way, Micah. It was a fight to get real information out of these people. One last example.
Sure.
I know I'm droning on a bit, but...
No, it's quite all right, bud. Go ahead.
I think it's important to understand how people operate.
I agree.
I posted back in March, posted my blog saying I had actually received high-res copies of the slides, and I was going to reveal them on May 4th, the day before the May 5th event, and I was going to do it on YouTube, and I was going to do it live and for free so that people could see them for free. Well, I was joking. For anybody who took that seriously, it boggles my mind. And yet, some people took it seriously. I got threatening emails and everything. But why I did it, one, every now and then I like to pull a prank, have a little fun with people. But two, this was what we were up against. They might slip up and release some useful information as they tried to counter what I had said.
Clever!
Well, I am a clever Canadian.
Yes, you are.
What did Ian Punnett used to call them? Tasty Canadians? Right. So Adam Du came out and said, left a comment in my blog, and he said, look, only three people have ever seen the full high-res copies. Okay, well, that's a useful piece of information because you guys have been running around saying all of these experts have looked at them.
Well, no, that's okay. Hilarious. I'm sorry. That is just hilarious. Go ahead. That's just hilarious to me, though.
Yeah, to me, too. But that was a useful piece of information.
Of course it was.
And then it got even more useful because then Bregaglia came out and said, well, no, the number's actually six, which is still a small number compared to what they were claiming. But still, now we kind of had, okay, maybe it's three, maybe it's six, but we have members within the slide promoting team disagreeing about how many people have actually seen high-res copies of the slides. And that kind of information wouldn't have come out if I hadn't pulled my little stunt. So it would have been so much easier if we had just been able to ask them, hey, how many people have seen the slides? Hey, what's your anonymous witness's real name? Can we check to see if he really was a lieutenant? Hey, this would be easy. Why don't you just show us the slides now? I mean, think about it this way too, Micah. This is sort of what annoys me. These people all claim that this is the greatest secret of all time, that this will change our world. Mm-hmm. And yet, usually following that, when they have some big thing to reveal, they say, you're going to have to wait until May or June or whenever we're going to hold our conference or event to find out what it is. If I'm sitting there going, well, I'm dying of cancer, or maybe I'll get hit by a bus tomorrow, or whatever, I'd like to know now. If there's some big earth-shattering, paradigm-altering thing and you know what it is, shouldn't you tell me today? Shouldn't we all know today? Why should anyone else, why should the world live in hunger or poverty or whatever you think you can cure with this information for another 4 or 5 months? tell us today. And yet they never do. They always have an event down the road. And so I often wonder, you know, how many people pass away or whatever in the interim between when they announce something and when they reveal it, thinking, well, if only I lived a little, their dying thought is, if only I could have held on for another 2.5 months, I could have seen the slides.
Ugh. Oh, man. You know, I think that for me, Paul, hearing all this, and by the way, this is just, you know, brilliant discussion. I always really like talking to you, but I mean, in this instance, more than just you and I getting together and batting around ideas with Greg or something like that, I mean, you're someone who is offering absolutely relevant commentary on this. And for all the aforementioned reasons, as has been discussed in the last half hour, I feel that that this is why we need to talk about this. And for those who are saying, oh, you know, I'm tired of it, I'm done with it, I don't want to hear anymore, that's okay, we will move on. But right now, in this moment, there are reasons why we need to talk about this. In fairness, I have known hardened skeptics who have argued that they don't communicate with researchers like me or others in what they perceive as the alternative community because they're afraid that it would affect their objectivity. I can't help but wonder, as silly as that sounds, if in this instance, on the other side of the fence, we didn't have believers who were saying in some strange, warped way the same sort of a thing. We, by virtue of the ones who'd discovered this and the people who have been trying to promote this narrative for the longest time, we, by the powers invested in us as researchers of the UFO phenomena, are the only ones who rightly should look at this. And by doing anything else, it will poison what we hope to achieve. You know, the mind reels at the reasons why people seem to think that keeping this to myself and being an island unto myself, looking out at the world, is the best way. At the end of the day, the big takeaway for me about this is that open lines of communication, direct information exchanges, transparency, open-mindedness, but yes, also I think we need to sharpen our skeptic side just as well and look more carefully and critically. That doesn't require cynicism, and even though you joke around about, you know, attacks and things like that, I don't think you ever step out of character, and I don't think that you're ever rude or unfair with things that you say about people, Paul. And when it's warranted, sometimes there is a need for that. Ad hominem attacks I can do without, but if someone has acted like a clown, I think maybe at least at times it is deserving that they be confronted or at very least opined outwardly as such by those who are observing. And so I don't think you've been unfair at all in this instance. I think you've been entirely objective. You and the guys you've been working with, you did a fine job. And yes, there is meaningful commentary provided by all of this. I hope people who've listened to this program thus far have learned that. We're almost out of time. I want to give you the final word here, Paul.
Thanks, Micah. Thanks for having me on. Thanks for continuing the conversation on this. My final word would be the Roswell slides are dead. But the teaching moment that can come out of it, the learning moment, is, as you say, open sourcing, transparency. We live in the 21st century, folks. The ufology of Donald Kehoe is long gone. This is a new ufology. It's an Edward Snowden anonymous kind of ufology where the information's eventually going to get out anyway. So you might as well be open about it. If what you're really searching for is truth, then spread the information as far and wide as you can and let people have at it. And let a don't be afraid of a conversation, because that conversation is the only way that you're going to find out what the actual truth is.
That's true, and I agree. And I thank you once again, Paul Kimball, for coming on to the Graylian Report, joining us, and continuing that conversation. See, folks, not all skeptics are bad after all, are they? Paul, take care, man, and we will be in touch, okay?
Thanks, Micah. Oh, wait, sorry. We were still on the air. I shouldn't have done my evil laugh.
Oh, no, that's okay. Evil laughs, they're almost requisite. Almost perfect. A requirement, in fact.
All right. Thanks very much, Micah. Have a good night.
And indeed, once again, thanks very much to Paul Kimball for joining us here on the Graylian Report. Fairly short notice, but when breaking news happens, we like to get to that and, of course, bring it to you. I do want to express to those of you listening live, do please stick around. Richard Dolan will be on, and, of course, I think it's only fair that he, I think, is one who was kind of dragged into this. Have an opportunity to have his say and talk about that. That'll be following. And, of course, those of you who are Graylian X subscribers, what will follow is another additional edition from us later this week. But for now, on behalf of all of us here at Graylian International Headquarters, yours truly, Caleb Hanks, Matthew Oakley, Chris Hayes, John Anderson, Dick Oakley, Jeremy London, Tyler Pittman, Rayson Robin Hobbs, and all of us here at Graylian International Headquarters, I am Micah Hanks. Glad to be your guide every week here on the Graylian Report, and we'll talk to you again next time. In the meantime, of course, stay strange, but please also be discerning.
been listening to The Graylian Report with Micah Hanks. Any rebroadcast or duplication of this program or program content without express written permission is strictly prohibited. The Graylian Report, in direct cooperation with the internet website, GraylianReport.com.